Thanks for downloading a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online. Now stay tuned for your 3CR podcast.
Freedom of Species would like to acknowledge the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation, who are the traditional owners of the land on which we broadcast today. We pay our respect to the elders of all of the lands on which we meet across Australia. Apriremo quelle gabbie, vili e co-criminali. Animal liberation. Animal liberation. Animal liberation. Whoa.
Hi and welcome to Freedom of Species, where the show that brings animal advocacy to the airwaves of 3CR Community Radio. You just heard Sally with Out of the Pan, who had a news roundup show covering a wide range of issues, issues impacting the rainbow communities around gender identity, sexuality, etc. Check that out every Sunday from 12 till 1. And Sally finished up with a song, Gimme Shelter by the Rolling Stones. On the show today, we have, fellow Freedom of Species host, Caroline. Hey, Caroline.
Hello.
And our guest is Meg. Hey, Meg.
Hi.
And we often start off with introducing guests, sort of their sort of animal story, I guess. It could be your vegan story, but it could be putting back the clock further than that. Yeah. I know a lot of us probably maybe felt an affinity with animals growing up before we went vegan or whatever, or maybe, I don't know, like objected to dissecting animals in high school or something like that. There may be like things before that, but I guess just introducing yourself and I guess how your kind of thinking and actions to animals have evolved over the years.
Yeah, oh, that's a great question. I wasn't cool enough when I was young to have been, you know, objecting to dissecting animals in school and that sort of thing. I definitely was someone who kind of went along with that. I think looking back, I definitely had a bit of a feeling about lots of things, and I used to get lovingly teased by my family. They used to call me Lisa Simpson. So I think that, and part of that was, you know, the Lisa vegetarian episodes and other things as well. But I guess I kind of, like many people, had really beautiful relationships with animals when I was growing up. I was lucky to grow up in a household where we had, you know, companion animals for most of my life, which was really lovely, and had really beautiful relationships with them, which is obviously so important. I think, you know, kids interacting with animals in that way is so crucial for many reasons. But yeah, I guess my journey towards sort of where I am now in terms of my relationship with animals and with, you know, my sense of justice and collective liberation, that sort of thing, probably started after I got really involved in the hardcore scene. I was probably, I think, maybe 14 or 15 when I first went vegetarian. And that was a tricky one to navigate in my household. I grew up in like a very kind of typical meat and three veg for dinner sort of home, and you know, the dynamics in the household were kind of interesting when I was a kid. But essentially, when I decided to stop eating meat, the response that I received was, "That's nice, feel free to cook your own food then." So my relationship with food then was really impacted, I guess, and like thrown on a pretty bit of a crash course, which, you know, I think served me well in the end. But it was tricky to navigate in the beginning, making that change in terms of the food that I was eating. Mm-hmm. And I was an athlete as well at the time, so making sure that I was eating enough was a big thing. But yeah, I was really lucky to have it wasn't just the influence of the hardcore scene in terms of social justice issues and the bands that I was listening to, but it was also the people I was surrounded by. Mm-hmm. I was one of the younger people in my friendship group, and, you know, friends I still have to this day who are, you know, 5, 10 years older than me who had been vegetarian or vegan for many years and had been around the hardcore scene for a lot longer than I had been. So I had just a really strong influence that I don't think was intentional necessarily from people, but it meant that I always had those examples around me to look to, which made it really easy when I, you know, I stopped eating animals initially at, you know, as I said, around 15, but then it kind of took me a few years to make the connections to other animal products, and, you know, my wardrobe and that sort of thing. And interestingly, it was an event in my life that happened, and I will be a bit careful because it revolves around like gendered violence and intimate partner violence. But I had a boyfriend at the time, and things kind of ended in a bit of a violent way. And after that happened, I kind of was assessing my life and myself as well. And I kind of had this epiphany of wanting to make my life more positive in, you know, ways outside of myself. And I realized that that meant, and I couldn't tell you why this was the connection that happened and this was the penny that dropped, but the penny that dropped for me, and I remember it so clearly, was I cannot possibly live a positive life and have a positive impact on the world while I am still eating animal products and consuming, you know, dead animals in the variety of ways that we as a society consume them and exploit them. So, yeah, I just had that switch flip. And luckily I had so many people to turn to for support and guidance and loads of cookbooks and vegan zines that had been going around and people had been collecting for years. So it made the transition for me really easy, to be honest, which I know is not the experience for so many people. And I've come across a lot of people over the years throughout the different kinds of work and advocacy that I've done that so many people just don't feel supported and don't have like-minded people around them. So I feel very lucky that I had that support. And that also led me to meeting activists, like lifelong activists and people who were doing frontline direct action work as, you know, the bulk of their lives. And yeah, so that opened so many pathways and doors for me. And I feel so lucky for all of it.
It is really huge, that support that you're talking about. And also those examples too, you know, that there are people around you that are sort of showing that there are pathways to living, you know, a more ethical life, and there are ways to, you know, reduce harm and to, you know, take animals out of our diet, a wardrobe, as you said. And I think that is so crucial to have that sort of support network. And it is really sad that many people, you know, don't have that and can feel really isolated in you know, wanting to, I guess, live their most authentic life, if you like. I think that the clothing is, you know, quite an issue too, you know, removing animals, you know, from our lives, because I was a, you know, teenage vegetarian punk with Doc Marten boots, right?
Yeah.
But this was at a different time. I'm sorry.
Well, I remember reading in one of the, it was a cookbook, but it, and I can't remember which one it was. I can picture it, but I can't remember. I think it was Peas on Your Plate or something like that. It was one of those, one of those 90s.
Peas Begins
one.
On Your Plate, maybe?
I think that was it.
I think so, Nick. Yeah.
Good memory. And yeah, that was one of the first ones that I remember ordering online. And it wasn't, it was very like text dense and it had loads of recipes, but it also had just a lot of commentary in it and almost like discussion, even though it's a one-way thing in that sort of situation when you're reading a book. But I really distinctly remember reading a passage about when people are making that transition, things like, you know, are people still wearing their old leather belt that they've had for 20 years? Are they still wearing leather shoes? And these sorts of things. And that to me is such an interesting conversation, and I know that everybody has really strong feelings in many ways about it. But yeah, I remember that really. I think she, I can't remember who the author was, but I remember the book is by a woman. I don't know. Do you remember who it was?
Oh, the, no. I never had that book, but I vaguely remember.
But she used the term vegan police, and she was basically like, look, I'm not the vegan police. We're all just here to do our best. And, you know, I personally have pretty – I'm an abolitionist at heart, like I know many of us are. But, you know, there are also aspects of realism that kind of come into the advocacy work I do that perhaps you know, that's for me to balance out my own personal feelings versus some of the ways that we go about the work that we do. But, yeah, I regardless of our feelings about it, I just, that term vegan police really stuck in my head after all these years.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely makes sense.
Yeah, I was going to pick up on a couple of things you said. Yeah, the first point you mentioned about the, like, the gendered violence, and I thought you were going to go a different direction with that, because I was thinking within the animal industries there's a lot of, like, I don't know if gendered violence is the right word, because it's more like, it's not gender identity, it's more like biological sex, but like sex to violence, I guess you could say, but like the sort of the exploitation of female animals in dairy, for example, as well, as another connection I was thinking too.
Yeah, absolutely.
But yeah, in terms of being 14 or 15, I was, and becoming, I think, vegetarian at that time, like it is quite a tough thing when, you know, a teenager has that realization and the parents are not supportive, because it's your responsibility to learn how to cook and also, as you say, balance the nutritional information. And like another sort of complicating factor is, like, yes, you can get all your nutrients on a plant-based diet, but it's not how we're grown up. Like we're taught nutrition based around animal consumption. And so, like, yes, the information is out there, but you may not have learned it growing up, and not from our parents, not from our schools, and those kind of things. So yeah, like you said you managed to do it okay, but that I was not vegan or even vegetarian that young. I was an adult by the time I did that. So anything you want more to about that experience of being a teenager and cooking for yourself and stuff?
Yeah. Oh gosh. You're really throwing me back. That's a good question. I mean, you make a great point. As you said, it's all at our fingertips now and in our pockets, all of that information, which is great. And I mean, there's a lot of misinformation out there around this stuff as well, as we all know. But look, it was a big learning curve, I have to be honest, because there wasn't anyone in my team or in my coaching team who didn't eat animals. So in that respect, everyone around me was very skeptical, and that carried on while I was vegan as well. That carried on right through, you know, kind of getting lovingly teased about being vegan, like literally while I was training. You know, I'd be on the mats and people would make jokes about getting a burger after training and that sort of thing. And they'd like eye me off to see if I was going to bite. So, you know, that sort of environment meant that I was kind of learning on the go by myself, even though socially I had a lot of support. But I also didn't really know that many other athletes. So yeah, to be honest with you, I ate so much pasta with red sauce and some veggies thrown in. And you know, I didn't like tofu initially. Hated avocado. Like there were so many things that I knew I needed to be eating that I didn't like the taste of. But I think because I was so determined, I knew I needed to be eating, you know, variety of foods, and where I needed to get, I almost hate talking about it because it's such a bugbear and a buzz topic when it comes to this stuff, particularly for people who aren't really educated about it, but making sure I was getting enough protein and all that sort of thing. But I mean, now tofu is one of my favorite foods on the planet. I love avocado. And it was sort of a situation where I was so determined that I knew what I needed. Once I started learning, I knew what I needed to be eating. And so I just ate it. And don't get me wrong, I'm someone who loves food. I love cooking. I love eating. I love baking. I love sweet. I love savory. But I, at the time, And throughout my like athletic career as well, for the most part, I was really viewing food as fuel. And, you know, I hope this isn't potentially upsetting for anyone who might be listening, who might have a complicated relationship with food. But I really was just kind of going, okay, what are the nutrients that I need? What do I need to put? I was making, you know, mass batches of, you know, 3 days worth of food at a time. And I would literally just throw in everything I knew that needed to be in there. And then I would make it taste good. And that was it. So particularly when I was in camps before a fight, that would be even stricter. And then that was kind of just my life for many years. Mm-hmm. And when I wasn't focusing on, you know, competition or my weight or my, you know, macro and micronutrient intakes, then I would go and eat a bunch of donuts and go out for dinners with my friends and order what I wanted. But yeah, it was a fairly steep learning curve. And initially I was just going really carb heavy, which I think is pretty common, to be honest, because I kind of got stuck in the situation that I think many people do when we don't have that education around food. I was removing the animals, but not being totally sure what to replace them with, without knowing that it's not necessarily about removing and replacing. It's about having something new and different. So yeah, lots of learning.
Yeah, I remember when I first went vegetarian, it was kind of like, I remember something I ate all the time was just like boiled veggies.
Yeah.
And then like, I'm definitely not an expert on this stuff, but I believe like kind of the nutrients pour out. And so you pour in that like green liquid you're pouring down the sink is like nutrients from the broccoli and stuff like that. So like, wasn't that nutritious? And like spring rolls or something like that, which is a bit of a car crash of a dinner. But yeah, kind of, I've learned things. But yeah, the idea of, okay, as you say, like you're not just like removing the meat and having what you'd eat, but like, I'm going to have tofu instead, or I'm going to have beans instead, or something like that. But you did also mention fighting. So maybe you could talk about what sort of athletic sport you were doing.
I kind of dropped that in there with no context. So I started Muay Thai and kickboxing when I was about 14, I think, ish. And then moved over to MMA in about, I think, 2009 maybe.
Wow.
Exciting.
Yeah, that's an interesting, because I know just right now, and this is a bit of a tangent, but I know there's like a big, this in the US, but like Trump support in the MMA community and stuff like that. I was wondering, was it like was it a particularly anti-vegan kind of like environment, or?
Look, it was initially for me, but that did change. So full disclosure, I've been... It sounds funny to say this when I'm still quite young. I retired. I retired a few years ago now, for, you know, a multitude of intersecting reasons, but not because I didn't enjoy the sport or anything like that. But when I first went vegan rather than vegetarian, I remember being at a nobody I knew in the fighting community didn't eat animals. I didn't even know any vegetarians. But then I was doing a wrestling seminar. So the team that I was part of, our head coach was originally from the US and very well respected coach worldwide in the fighting scene. And we used to have fighters like come from overseas to come and do fight camps with our team and train with him and train with our team, our fighters. And so it was one of those situations. And then when fighters from overseas were here, we'd help them put together seminars and things like that to make a little bit of money on the side, because surprise, fighters don't get paid very much unless you're in like the top 5%. But yeah, I was doing a wrestling seminar with that was being run by my friend Brian Ebersol, who was at the time a fighter in the UFC. And there was another fighter, Jesse something, doesn't matter. But they had someone with them who was taking care of their nutrition. And at the time, there were, not only did I not know any people who didn't eat animals in the fighting scene, but there also weren't very many women fighting, especially MMA. There were probably like more Muay Thai fighters, more kickboxers. But in the MMA scene, yeah, there just were not many. So like, you know, case in point, I was part of the first women's MMA fight in both Victoria and in the Northern Territory. And it was kind of like this small group of women who would fly interstate to fight each other.
Oh, right.
And, you know, so, and like, you know, I had an opponent flown in from New Zealand once and, you know, all that sort of thing. So, at this seminar, I was the only woman participating in the seminar, and then we were hanging out afterwards, and there was, aside from Brian's now wife, Alicia, who was there and is like total badass, amazing athlete in her own right. But aside from Alicia, there was only one other woman there in addition to myself. So three of us out of about 50 people. I was the only one taking the seminar, and the other woman, her name was Nikki, was there. She was helping both Jesse and Brian with their nutrition in the lead up to, they were both fighting in the midst of a fight camp. So, but Brian had this way of going about things where in a fight camp, he would cut out animal products from his diet in order to help him lose weight, feel lighter, feel faster, all that sort of thing, which is fairly common. But yeah, Nikki was vegan and had this like organic vegan produce business. Brian had this book that was like a vegan athlete book. And I was just like, why do you have that book? I didn't understand, because I didn't know he was doing this in his fight camp.
Can't have been. I know Lee Chantel did a book on vegan athletes. But it's a different one?
Do you know what? I think it was like, this is really casting my mind back. Is it Frank Medrano, the calisthenics guy? Oh, do you remember him?
Okay, no.
I think it might have been him, potentially. Okay. I might be crossing my wires with like learning about who that was at the time, but I'm pretty sure it was that.
Okay.
But yeah, so we started, and he's like, oh, Nikki gave it to me. I was like, wait, what's going on here? All of a sudden I'm realizing that there's another vegan in the room. So yeah, it was not really common, if heard of at all, for even the fighters who were doing that sort of thing, like cutting meat, animals out of their diet during a fight camp in order to lose weight and feel better. No one was a full-time vegan or vegetarian. So yeah, I was kind of on my own a little bit, but that started changing. And I think like I ended up meeting Nate Diaz, he and his brother Nick, who were like pretty famous UFC fighters. I don't think they were full-time vegans. They had like they were like gluten-free and a few other bits and bobs, like things that they didn't eat. But there was kind of a narrative around the two of them for a few years anyway, that they were vegan. Maybe they were after that time when we met, because I remember chatting to him about food. I mean, there are a few vegan MMA fighters that I know of now whose names are escaping me. I think there's an Australian woman, I think her name's Ashley something. Since I retired, I kind of...
Is there like a Danzig guy, Matt
Danzig? Oh, Matt Danzig. Is that? That's right. Yeah, good one. Yeah. How can I not remember the one whose last name is Danzig? Yeah, that's right. Yeah, good one. Yeah. But yeah, so there are a few around now. I'm just a little bit out of the loop. Yeah.
And I think MMA has become much bigger now, but it's mixed martial arts, isn't it? It kind of combines all those things, kickboxing, Muay Thai. I'm not saying that right, but yeah.
Oh, that's
all
okay.
Those,
yeah.
All those different things, yeah.
Yeah. So it kind of, it's had an interesting like evolution. Because it sort of started as quote unquote no rules fighting. And it was very much like a style versus style sort of thing. In the very, very early days of the UFC, like pre Dana White, but pre his days, you'd have boxers fighting sumo wrestlers, fighting Kyokushin karate people, fighting Brazilian jiu-jitsu athletes. So it was a really interesting sport back then. I mean, it's still interesting now, but it sort of evolved. And then while I was doing it, it was sort of fighters who had come from other disciplines would then, which is what happened with me. Obviously, I was a striker who then moved over, learned how to wrestle.
Sorry, striker?
Yes, a striker. Good at punching and kicking things.
Okay. Cool. Yeah.
Yeah, because I came from kickboxing and Muay Thai. That was my like bread and butter, as they say.
Bread and Nutlex. Yeah.
Bread and Nutlex. Yes. Bread, what's the? There's a new one, or a fairly new one now, that's like a salted butter. I can't remember the brand, but I've heard very good things.
Okay.
Yeah. So it sort of became people, coming from their original discipline and then expanding their skills, which, as I said, that's what I did, and that's what most of the fighters I knew had done. And basically you have the three main disciplines of, you know, whatever your striking looks like, whether it's, you know, Muay Thai, boxing, kickboxing. And then you have your Greco-Roman and freestyle wrestling. And I mean, we definitely don't need to bore people with the details around what the difference between the types of wrestling are, but
I know Sally, the show before, is a big wrestling fan, so then listening, Sally might appreciate the
like
wrestling
pro wrestling.
No, more the WWE, like they're the more theatrical kind of thing.
I've met a few pro wrestlers over the years, and it's really interesting. I think it's a little different in the US. The US wrestling, I met a couple of guys who wrestled on like WWE or WWF, maybe both. I think it's the same one that, I don't know. I watched it until I was about 10 years old, and then I didn't. So I'm out of touch with that. But the ones I've met in Australia, interestingly, most of them don't have an actual wrestling background. They love pro wrestling and learn how to do that, and that's not like, it's incredibly athletic and pretty full on, but so many of them don't actually know anything about wrestling, which is really interesting to me. But it's essentially like what you see in the Olympics. There's a couple of different kinds in terms of the rules and the types of takedowns you use and that sort of thing. But so you're striking discipline, your grappling or wrestling discipline, and then Brazilian jiu-jitsu, like your submissions. So mixing it all together. But then it's kind of, once it started getting more popular as a sport, people started learning MMA right from the beginning. And so there are fighters like, and I'm kind of showing how out of touch I am here, but like Rory McDonald was one of the first really well-known fighters who had not started in another discipline. When he just started training MMA. And I think it just makes a whole different breed of athlete when it's like that.
We better take a song, right?
I'm yapping away.
Song.
That's great. All right, should we start off with the Judas Wolf song maybe?
Yeah.
That makes sense. Snared, anything you want to say about it, Meg?
There's lots to say about this one. This is my old band, Judas Wolf. We're not together anymore, but a vegan straight edge band. Caroline kindly let me know I could play one of my own band songs. My current band, we don't have music out just yet. It's coming. So I've gone with a Judas Wolf song instead, and we can chat about it after if you want.
Yeah, awesome.
Great. All right. Here is Judas Wolf, and you're listening to Freedom of Species on 3CR Community Radio. We are.
Hey, cuz, we've been thinking about something for a while. Just wanted to get your advice. The government's got this compensation scheme for adoptees. Stolen gen, you know, like me, but it's not going to make any difference from what I lost.
I don't know about that, brother. It's worth a shot. Yeah. What do you got to lose? That might buy you heaps.
Yeah, what? I'm going to want to have a crack at it, cuz.
If you are Aboriginal or Torres Strait Islander and were removed from family or community in the Northern Territory before 1 July 1978 or in the ACT or Jervis Bay before 11th of May 1989, you may be eligible for the Territory Stolen Generations Redress Scheme. If you know of a family member who was removed but passed away after the scheme was announced on the 5th of August 2001, you may be eligible to apply for redress for them. Call Link Up Victoria, VACA, on 037 002 3700 and leave a message for a callback or contact the Territory Stolen Generations Redress Scheme on 1800 566 111.
A 3CR supporter.
Living with arthritis can bring tough questions. How do I manage the pain? What treatments work? Will it ever get better? It can feel overwhelming. That's why the Arthritis Info Line is here to help. It's a toll-free service with trained staff who understand arthritis and can provide answers, support and resources. If you're living with arthritis or caring for someone who is, call 1-800-011-041 or visit arthritisaustralia.com.au/infoline. You don't have to face it alone.
A 3CR supporter.
Freedom of Species would like to thank Project Fresh Start for their financial support of this program. Project Fresh Start provides free plant-based food to the community, with a focus on providing healthy, fresh plant-based food and education around healthy eating and living in a way that sustains the individual, the community, the animals, and the planet. To find out more about our community lunches and programs, check out projectfreshstart.org.au.
And we're back on Freedom of Species. It's Nick and Caroline today with our guest, Meg Edge. Now, before we get back to our conversation, we just wanted to shout out to Project Fresh Start, who are our new sponsor for Freedom of Species. Thanks so much for that. Project Fresh Start is a vegan food justice organization, so please check them out. They provide free vegan meals to people in need. You might want to access their services or find out about volunteering or make a donation. All of that would be much appreciated. So before the announcements, we heard Snared by Judas Wolf, which is Meg's old band. So it leads us into conversations that we sort of started earlier in the first sort of section about, you know, the hardcore scene and, you know, your involvement there, and maybe talking also about straight edge.
Oh, sure.
Oh,
wow, you're just like giving me free rein here.
For sure.
Oh, gosh, the straight edge, love of my life. It's such a huge part of who I am and has been for a long time, but my relationship with what that means has definitely changed over the years. And the more I've learned about the world and about social justice and about politics and all that sort of thing. I think when I've been straight edge since I was 14 or 15, I feel like all these things sort of happen around the same time.
And should we tell
us? Oh, I should tell people what it is. I'm so sorry. I'm normally very aware of my echo chamber, but sometimes I forget about things like context. Sorry. So straight edge, to put very, very simply, is abstaining from using drugs and alcohol, from smoking. If you throw right back to the beginning of it, the third X is about abstaining from promiscuous sex, which has been a very contentious and like much talked about, not so much anymore, which is great. People have moved on. But
yeah, I've always personally found that a bit of a weird one. I just remember having a conversation with someone and she was like, oh, I think I'm straight edge, but I do sometimes have promiscuous sex. I'm like, you really don't have to confess to me about having I just kind of feel like,
yeah,
it's kind of a bit of a weird one. I did like, and I feel like going, this is a bit nerdy, but like going back to Ian McKay and he had a song, Straight Edge, in the band Minor Threat, but like talk about not having having conquestual sex was his wording. Yeah. I feel like that is a good thing, like not having like sex as a male, like to like inflate your ego or kind of like dominance over women. Or like, I think that is a good thing, but like kind of nitpicking around like what's casual and what's not feels a bit strange to me.
It's a weird one. And I'm very glad that we have moved on from it. I think he also, you know, talked about it not being used as a distraction as well, or as an escape. And so I think, you know, in that way I can sort of understand how it can fall into the same category as using substances. That's not necessarily how I feel about it, but I can understand that perspective. But it's, I think, in the early 2000s when I first sort of showed up, it was talked about quite a bit, but it was also weaponized in a sense against some people and not others. And, you know, we saw a lot of, and we still to this day, unfortunately, see quite a bit of misogyny in the scene and, you know, different forms of violence against people who aren't men.
I know there was also the, like, some people sort of capitalized on it, like Christian, and kind of said like no sex for marriage, which was like not the origins of the movement at all. It came from a very like secular and non-religious context, but people were trying to sort of make it as part of that as well.
There were a lot of people who had it was like a really, I don't want to use the word cliche because I don't want to you know, like disparage anybody's, you know, feelings and beliefs, but it was a bit of a, like, the image was a bit of a cliche thing on the internet of the tattoo of praying hands that were X'd up. I was like, yeah, okay. You're both nodding. I know you would have seen it. Early 2000s, that was a big thing. There was a lot of like Christian rock that it then became, there was like a big movement in Christian hardcore, which is a very interesting, I mean, when I'll come, sorry, I'm steering us away. I'll come back to Straight Edge. But
I think I did a lot of that steering.
That's okay. I mean, it is a really interesting topic of conversation and like thing to think about as well when you look at the ways that organized religion preys on people. And that's not to say, you know, I don't have any negative feelings towards people who believe in God, people who practice religion, people who practice their faith, and that sort of thing. I believe that if you're not hurting anyone, whatever. But organized religion as a business and as an institution and as a system, that's where I start to have issues. So the whole notion of hardcore then being used as a bit of an in with the kids. It's kind of a funny one, but but there were bands who and still are bands who are like genuine hardcore kids making music that is about how they feel and they're religious and they believe in God. And so, you know, that's a little different, but I don't know if you've seen the Instagram page Catatonic Youth, but they post some really funny, it's an unhinged account that posts unhinged music videos. And there's some pretty funny ones of like using different genres of music to push very, very overtly Christian messaging. And sometimes it's even by adults, like middle-aged people doing it. So, you know, that's an interesting thing. But, yeah, I can understand all of these interconnections because the same thing goes with being vegan straight edge. There are people who are straight edge, there are people who are vegan, and then there are people who are vegan straight edge. And it's kind of, I don't know, it is its own thing and it does intersect. And so for me, it intersects because for me it's all political. Initially, being straight edge for me wasn't political, it was personal. It's still definitely both now, but I'm going to out myself here, but I was drinking and smoking quite young. And by the time I was about 14, I was done with it. And I realized I realized things that I didn't want to be because of examples that were in my life from adults around me. So I just developed this really strong sense of who and what I didn't want to be. And that led me to the straight edge. And, you know, then there were, it kind of grew and morphed for me over the years. It also became about my body is the only thing that I will ever actually own. There's no actual ownership of anything in this world at the end of the day. There's consumption, but the only thing we ever truly own is the body that we're in. And so I, you know, developed this very protective sense of taking care of that. And so for me, when I was a bit younger, that meant eating really well. It meant exercising. It meant taking care of myself in physical ways as well as, you know, mental and emotional ways. It meant not putting things into it that would harm me. To me, the biggest thing of all is that now anyway, and it took me some time to come around to this, but it does go hand in hand for me with being vegan in that I don't want to contribute to systems that are actively harming our society and the people who live within it and the people who live outside of it as well. You know, there are, for example, there are party drugs that people use that are affecting people on the other side of the world. And obviously animals. So for me, it all goes together.
Yeah, and I am both of those things as well, vegan and straight edge. And, yeah, I guess like one, and I was thinking for this show, like how they go together. And, yeah, for me, that they do and they don't. So, like, as far as I'm concerned, you can be vegan and you're just as vegan whether you're straight edge or not. And you can be straight edge and you're just as straight edge whether you're vegan or not. So I do see them as separate in a way. But I guess one way I see them as connected, and this is kind of relates to kind of punk and hardcore music, is that, like, you're okay with standing out and going against the grain with both of those things. Mm-hmm. Like, and I feel like I was straight edge a long time before I knew the term straight edge. I just, like, when I've discovered the term, that's how I live anyway. And at the time I was listening to some very non-straight edge bands in the punk scene, but still the message was kind of go your own way, do your own thing against the grain, the Bad Religion album and song. Like, so it was like, it kind of fit, but I guess you could possibly go the other way of like, oh, I'm already vegan, I don't want to also not drink. But like for me, I kind of see them as related of like, yeah, being the one of like being in a whole group of people and being, I'm the only one like not doing that thing and being okay with that. That's sort of one sort of social connection I see between the two.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I like the way you put that as well when you said you can be vegan and not straight edge and you're still just as vegan and vice versa. Yeah, I like the way you put that. Yeah.
We better go to another song, actually. So the next one we have is Hoax by Masochist. Masochist. Okay. Yeah. So I've heard that word spoken a lot more than I've seen it written. So yeah.
Exciting. I love this band so much.
Anything you want to say about the song?
Masochist are a band from Lismore. And honestly, I want to swear, but I won't. They're just so good and they're wonderful people. And Rose, the singer, is such a badass, an incredibly talented artist, musician, wonderful human being, deserves all the love and support in the world. And I just feel so lucky that she's part of our community because she just gives so much and is the best. And so I'm very excited that we're playing this song. Thank you.
Cool.
Enjoy. And if you are listening to the podcast, you won't hear the music, but if you do want to hear the music, you can listen to the show live every Sunday 1 till 2 via 3cr.org.au, and the episodes are also available via our website 3cr.org.au/freedom of species for the week after they air. So check that out as well if you want to hear the music.
Freedom of Species thanks Animal Free Science Advocacy for their financial support of this program. Animal Free Science Advocacy works to create a future where no animals are harmed in the name of science, and scientific progress is advanced through animal-free research methods. Become a member today by visiting animalfreesci.org.au. That's animalfreesci.org.au.
Questions, questions, questions flooding into the mind of the concerned young person today.
It's nearly Science Week again, so you better be getting your teams ready for the annual Lost in Science Trivia for 2025.
Yes, Monday the 11th of August, starting at 6 at the Birmingham Hotel in Fitzroy, Melbourne.
All the details on the 3CR website or on the Lost in Science Facebook page.
And if you want to register for a table, email us at lostinsci@gmail.com.
You might have heard about the Community Radio Plus app, but it's only when you start using it that you'll wonder how you lived without it.
You can listen to us wherever you are, at home, work, driving,
on public transport, gardening, protesting, or even in the bath.
Just search Community Radio Plus wherever you get your apps.
Welcome back to Freedom of Species on 3CR Radical Radio. We've got Meg Edge discussing being a vegan athlete, straight edge in veganism, and much more. Mm. Where are we going for these last five or six minutes, Caroline or Meg?
Time
or?
Timepiece.
Oh my gosh, I've really yapped there.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, that was. Yeah.
Timepiece?
Yeah, sure.
Tell us all about it.
Oh, before we do that, is it okay if I say that song that we just heard by Masochist? Masochist are coming down to play here on the 6th of September. So hit up their Instagram. I'm pretty sure it's just Masochist. Check out their Instagram.
We'll put a link in our show notes so people can find it.
Yeah. Cool. Timepiece. Oh, my gosh. Okay. So Timepiece is the band that I'm currently playing bass in with some wonderful friends. Full disclosure, it's not a vegan band. A couple of us in the band are vegan. I think three out of five are vegan. We're pretty new as a band, but everyone in the band has been around for a long time. I think all of us except Robin, the singer, have been in bands before. And it's kind of funny because I think the only reason Robin hasn't been in a band before, because she's been around forever, is because, classic story, no one had asked her, which is a very typical experience for women in hardcore. That is changing, which is wonderful. But essentially the band started, Alan and Charlie had been in a band together previously that ended, and they kept writing together. And they approached me and asked me to do vocals, but I was already working on a project that I was doing vocals in, and I didn't want to take up space doing vocals in two bands. That project fell through, unfortunately. Everyone was just too busy and it didn't eventuate, but they still wanted me to be in the band, which was really nice, and they said, play whatever you want. So I started learning to play bass.
Well, I was going to ask you, because I was thinking, I didn't know that you play bass.
No, yeah. I didn't. I'm one of those people who, luckily, I can kind of pick up most instruments and do something with them. And I have a fairly musical background from when I was younger. I never really dedicated myself to playing guitar or bass or drums because I was fighting. Thankfully everyone in the band has been super patient and encouraging as I learn to play on the go. But Robin was our first pick in terms of our dream vocalist for the band. Silly me, had this thought in the back of my head that if she had wanted to be in a band, she would have by now, because she knows everyone, she's been around forever, she's so passionate and so talented and so good at everything she does. But I was very wrong. And when we approached her, she was so enthusiastic and said to me she had always wanted to do a band and no one had ever asked her. I'm tearing up a little bit because I just love these people and this band so much. It's fun. It's collaborative. It's supportive. When we were recently recording our EP, the person, Jamie, who was recording us, said before we had even started, he just like was standing in the room and he said to us, you all really like each other, don't you? Yeah. And we're like, yeah? What do you mean? And he said, I've recorded a lot of bands and this is not always the vibe. And he said, you can usually tell pretty quickly what the dynamic is. And he kind of said that multiple times throughout. We recorded just in 2 days across a weekend. And yeah, throughout the weekend, he kind of kept saying like, oh, it's so nice to see how supportive you all are of each other and that you're just really good friends. I was like, yeah, we're all friends first, bandmates second.
Yeah, I feel like there's some crossover between like community radio and punk and hardcore, because when you do the radio here, we're not perfect at it, but it's kind of giving a voice to a range of people. And I feel like punk's a little bit the same in that like you don't have to be perfect at playing your instrument, but like everyone can come in and kind of friends getting together. Of course, like that is the ethos of punk. Of course, there's different ways that people can be excluded within the scene for sure, but I feel like that is definitely the talk of punk. It doesn't always walk that walk anyway, but
And it's a nice thing to sort of try and take back into our own lives and the way we view ourselves and the things that we do. And I'm terrible for this. It's something I'm still very much learning. But taking that notion of you don't have to be perfect to do something, like just do 100%. It. Do it imperfect. Do it scared.
And that's great that Robin is now in the band, vocalist.
Yeah.
Absolutely fantastic.
And she's one of the greatest front people you will ever see. She's so good. Yeah. Everyone's been missing out all this time.
That's awesome. When will your EP be available, do we think?
Ooh, I don't have a date for you, by the end of the year for sure. Okay. It's currently being mixed. Okay. So, yeah.
So we'll put the Timepiece Instagram link in the show notes and people can, you know, follow along and find out when it's coming out.
Yeah, thank you. We have some shows coming up too, so feel free to come to those.
Yeah.
Although actually one of them is sold out, but there's an all ages show at Fairfield Bowls Club on the 24th of August with some amazing local bands. So that'll be good.
Cool.
Yeah, I did want to just before we take off quickly mention that 3CR has met and exceeded the Radiothon target. So you mentioned a while ago that we met ours as Freedom of Species, but just want to thank everyone who donated to Freedom of Species, but also everyone who donated to 3CR generally. And it's great that we've got that money to keep the station going for another year and going to air, not just Freedom of Species, but all the great shows across 3CR. So thanks everyone.
It's been an absolute pleasure talking with you. The time just goes too fast.
It went so fast.
We'll have to get you to come back.
Absolutely.
I would love to. Thank you.
Cool. All right. Let's go to the closing song, which is it's Hayley Williams with Mirtaz. You can pronounce it.
Mirtazepine.
I'm obsessed with.
It's brand new. She dropped it on Friday.
There we go.
Yeah.
Anything else you want to say about it, or that kind of speaks for itself?
It speaks for itself, to be honest. The lyrics are pretty, it's like, it's a love song to her antidepressants.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Nice. All right. Enjoy the song. And if you do want to hear more music, you can stay tuned for Rotations, which is coming up next, which features music from a wide range of different 3CR presenters. So stay tuned for some more music. Thanks for listening. And thanks for Meg for joining us. Great to have you on.
Thanks so much.
Thanks, Nick.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.